Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook/ IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter at IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPakulski.com.
What's up, everybody? BPAC and Dr. Wilson in the house. Another episode of the Muscle Expert Podcast, and the muscle expert himself, Dr. Wilson. What's going down, buddy?
Hey, man, I just just got home from the lab, man. We're just, cranking out data for bodybuilding 24-7 here. Real exciting stuff. And one of the topics that we've been doing a lot of research on is ketogenic dieting.
Mm-hmm. So, man, I think you know that, you know, this podcast is getting a ton of attention now. You're getting a lot of new recognition in the industry. Like, you get tons of new followers, which is awesome. And you know, nobody deserves it more than you, man. You're putting so much into researching, you know, the science behind optimizing training. So, I think I speak for everybody out there. I want to say thank you for doing what you do, and hopefully we continue to do cool stuff together.
Well, man, I really, really appreciate it, man. It's awesome to be able to work with you and really just bridge that gap between, you know, the lab and actual real-world application to bodybuilders.
That's really what it is, man. I mean, everything you do in the lab is awesome, but until you teach the people in the trenches about the application of it, it's worthless, right? Ultimately. So
exactly.
There could be, so that's what the cool thing about we do is trying to bridge that gap by telling people what's actually going on and to benefit themselves. Ultimately, you know, research doesn't mean anything until you teach people how to apply it. So that's why you're doing such a great job, man, is because you not only do you walk the walk or you talk the talk, but you're walking the walk and doing it all yourself. And that's the best part about you, man, I think.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's so many guys out there who are doing research, but you know, don't ever apply it to themselves. And we had this conversation. I took a training course last weekend or 2 weeks ago. And the idea that there's so many personal trainers out there who take courses and have multiple certifications, but none of them train. Like, how can you teach someone how to exercise if you don't train? And similar with yourself, you know, how can you teach someone about nutrition or optimizing their metabolism or anything to do with muscle building if you don't do it yourself? It just doesn't make sense. So that's why I think you're the Yeah, you're the best at what you do, man, and you're bridging the gap, and that's why people appreciate you, because you're in there busting your ass. Like, and for those of you that don't know, Dr. Wilson is extremely strong and training his ass off and literally would bury most guys in the gym. So, you know, huge respect to Dr. Wilson. Maybe we should get him shooting some videos, get him publicized on there on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm excited, man.
Okay, so the topic of today, because it's so current for you and also probably going to be pretty current for me, high carb versus high fat diet. So I think both of them have an application, and I've done just about everything under the sun on myself. And I'll tell you a little bit about what I've been doing lately versus what I'm going to be doing coming up, because they're actually pretty conflicting. And I'd like to hear your feedback or your perspective on what you've been doing lately. And, I guess you've been doing some studies and you've been applying ketogenic dieting yourself, which for those of you that don't know is just simply a really high-fat, low-carb, low-protein diet. And then let's talk about that. And then it's scientific perspective on performance, because everyone's got a different opinion. And then you guys have just completed a recent study and you're studying a new one. So let's dive into that for a little bit, and we'll try to keep the call really short and give some people some really good golden nuggets that they can apply.
Perfect. So basically, you know, for everyone listening, I think it's real important to kind of define what ketogenic dieting is. The key point is that I think a lot of bodybuilders, when they say they're ketogenic dieting, they're really doing a high protein, high fat, low carb diet.
Right.
And a lot of times they'll report when they do it, like, oh, I feel horrible. You know, I tried it for a week and, you know, my performance suffered. I felt flat in the gym. But what they're really just doing is a high fat, high protein diet. It's actually not ketogenic. It's more like Atkins.
Right.
So that's ketogenic. The thing is that, as we know, ketogenic dieting is actually when your body stops using carbs as its main fuel, and it switches over to fat and produces these things called ketones. And in order to do that, your fat intake is really actually greater than like 70% of your diet. And that's one thing that we want to emphasize to everyone listening to this. that's actually when you switch over into, quote, ketosis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hard to do, man. Hard to do unless you're really, really committed to it, you know. Like, for me, it always ends up being a high-protein, high-fat diet, and especially someone who's training you. There's got to be that fine line that you toe the line of how low can your protein really go and still build some appreciable amount of muscle. So that's kind of the gray area for me. Is I've never really, I mean, I've done a keto diet for maybe a couple of weeks, but like actual, you know, getting the benefit of keto diets, I think you'll explain is necessary to go a little bit longer, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, one of the things is, it's always going to depend on the individual. Like with a guy like you, where, especially, and I've seen you prepping for your contest, you're training 3, sometimes 4 times a day. And so you actually might be able to get into ketosis, you know, on a higher protein intake. But for most people, they're going to have to go more like 20% of their diet. But the thing is, they're still getting around, you know, maybe 2 grams per kilogram of body weight, you know, or maybe around 1 gram per pound. So, you know, it's always going to depend on your training. Whereas I know for me, that's about what I need to get into ketosis. Whereas I've seen guys like a good friend of mine, like Lawrence, we talked last week with him, Lawrence Ballinger, he actually get into ketosis and have 200 grams of carbs a day. So it's going to vary on the individual. For a normal average individual, they're probably going to need to keep their carbs under 30. Maybe they can get away with under 50, and their protein probably at no more than 1 gram per pound, and the rest of their diet is that. So, like for me, for example, I've been testing it on myself, and I've been doing like, I mean, basically what you're eating is like blue cheese, you know, bacon, whole fat cheese, whole fat cream, butter. A lot of, honestly, like the breakfasts that we've talked about on these podcasts, where I know, right. Like, for example, you wake up in the morning you eat like ground beef and butter and coconut oil. That's a keto type of meal.
Right. Now, here's the question, Don. How long have you been doing keto?
So I've been actually experimenting with different forms. So I tried it over probably the last like 6 months. I've tried different types of ketogenic dieting, and probably the last 2 months, I've been really into the like pure ketogenic dieting. Like 70% of my diet is fat. So, you know, maybe like 25% of my diet is protein. So, and then maybe 5% carb. And one thing I noticed was that usually when trying it, it actually gets better the longer you go. So one thing I noticed, like when I try it for a week, I feel horrible. Like, I'm like, and oftentimes, you know, I'm like, there's no way I could do this. I'm flat. I feel small. And then I was like, you know what? I was talking to Dominique D'Agostino, and he's like, man, actually, I started feeling better several months. I actually felt really adapted several months after. So now I've been doing it for 2 months, and I actually feel better with fat than with carbs. So, like, when I switch over to carbs or something, just to do it, or for I'm at an event or something, you know, social, I don't feel good, almost like when someone was using carbs before and they went to fat and they didn't feel good, because my body's made adaptation.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you my experience just really briefly. I feel awesome on high fats and low carbs. I feel my energy feels great, but I tell you, I do notice my performance starts to suffer a little bit, but I've also never, I guess I have kind of persisted on it. So, you know, with how frequently I train, I guess I have to kind of find that balance with getting some carbs and, you know, keeping them moderate. I just find that, you know, I feel great. Energy level feels great. I don't dip. I don't get ups and downs like I do with high carb diets. But I also just don't have that crazy pump and that crazy growth potential. I don't think I grow as efficiently. You know, if it were like a day-to-day maintenance or a day-to-day functioning perspective, there's no question that high fat is better from my experience and everyone else that I talk to. But as far as like optimizing growth, I mean, I've done it every way from sideways, and you may tell me I'm wrong. Like, I've never done a pure keto diet for a long time. But I just, for myself, I'm not able to do really awesome workouts unless I replenish my carbs about every 4 to 5 days, maybe 5 to 7 days, depending on, you know, if I'm trying to grow or if I'm trying to cut. Like, if I'm trying to grow, then it'll be every 4 to 5 days. If I'm trying to cut, it'll be every 5 to 7 days for a carb, like, reload. And then I'd like to talk about that with you as well.
Yeah, man, and that's a really, really cool way to kind of do it. The thing is, like you pointed out, like, you feel good, especially when you get into high-fat dieting. It actually does, like, right now, for example, I feel really good. I don't crash. But the thing is, like you pointed out, one thing we know, and we talked about this a lot on the podcast, that the pump is very important for growth. And you know, and I know that, like, and then even if you and I know that when you get a pump, you just want to train harder. Like, when you're in that zone, it's like, damn, this is good. And you do feel like you can't get that crazy pump. And usually, kind of like you pointed out, if I feel like after 4 or 5 days, that's when you start actually losing it. So you carb up, and then that lasts for, several days. So, yeah, so that's one of the things. Well, maybe cyclic ketogenic dieting can be a really good method, and that's kind of what we're testing in the lab this semester, actually, in conjunction with Powerhouse.
Yeah, I mean, that's typically like, you know, I mean, I feel better. I get way less grumpy, way less crabby when I'm on a high-fat diet. Like, I never get shitty when I'm dieting, I mean, maybe for the last 2 or 3 weeks, but for the most part, I'm very stable, very balanced. But when I'm on a high-carb diet, I find because your blood sugar crashes, you tend to get more ornery and get a little grumpy from time to time. So maybe that's one of the things that's correlated with bodybuilding grumpiness is, you know, high testosterone plus complete peaks and valleys in carbohydrate intake. So yeah, it's a consideration, man, for like the average person. I'll tell you what, when I retire from bodybuilding, there's no way in hell I'm going to do a high-carb diet. There's no benefit. There's so many detriments as far as health from my perspective. Like, you know, I don't want to be inflamed. I don't want to be sick, because I mean, every it seems as though every disease is correlated with high amounts of carbohydrate intake. So I definitely guarantee, you know, after bodybuilding, I'll be doing it for general health purposes. I'll be doing a keto style, you know, with maybe just lots of vegetables and greens and stuff.
100%, man. I think, honestly, and that's one of the things that, like, research from Dominique DiAgostino out of USF has shown me is that the health benefits to ketogenic dieting are amazing. And one thing I actually kind of want to point out you guys listening right now is, Ben makes a great point. He points out inflammation. Now, everyone knows I get inflammation, Ben gets inflammation, you guys listening to this podcast get inflammation. And so, you know, there are times when, like, you know, I'm trying to increase the frequency on training my leg, you know, and the more frequent I train, you know, there's a lot of good research on training frequency. The more frequently you can train, oftentimes the greater your gains are, but what limits you a lot of times is your joints. And you know how it is. Like, there are times when my joints are hurting so bad that it's like, damn, it's taking me longer and longer to warm up. When you do keto, if people just in the off season, just to relieve their joint pain, honestly, doing ketogenic dieting, even if it's for a month, it's almost the most amazing therapy for your joints. We know ketones have anti-inflammatory effects. And that's one way that bodybuilders can use it to stay healthy and recover from really brutal training.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. I mean, I've had 2 surgeries in the last 2 years, and maybe not everybody knows that, but every time I do the surgery, either leading into the surgery and then after the surgery, I'm always doing a keto diet, so I just minimize inflammation. It's just so important, you know, like, and oftentimes when on days when I'm not training or months when I'm not training or weeks or whatever it happens to be, it's usually pretty pretty close to a ketogenic diet. And I think that the problem people run into is the idea that they've been brainwashed against high fats. And I think we just need to maybe between the two of us, Doc, if you and I put together a campaign on just educating people on what actually happens in the body. Because, you know, like all through the 80s and 90s, we were told that, you know, low-carb or low-fat, high-carb diets are the way to be healthy. So our brain is just, it's just a paradigm. Your brain is built around this paradigm that suggests, hey, you know, high fat is going to hurt you or give you heart disease or something bad, you know, high cholesterol, whatever it may be. So I think it's important for maybe you and I to combine and join forces and maybe write some articles, man. On just teaching people like what actually happens and when does the detriment actually come in? Like, is it okay to eat bacon and butter and cream? And even though, you know, everyone's, and even the American Dietetics Association is telling us that it's a terrible idea, it's going to kill you. You know, where's the line, man? And unfortunately with the internet nowadays, there's one nutritionist telling you that if you eat, you know, bacon and cream, you're going to die. And there's another one telling you if you're going to eat high protein, you're going to die. And there's just such a fear-based economy. And what really is true, man? And this is the problem, right? Ultimately, we don't really know, but we speculate this and that. So, you know, we just need to educate people now on the intelligence that actually is behind some of the nutrition concepts that you research and some of the smart people in the world research.
100%, man. You know, it was funny because Ryan Lowry was giving a presentation on ketogenic dieting to our nutrition class, and he showed this graph where you look at our society and you look at body fat, and they show the graph on it kind of slightly going up, and then they show when the low-fat recommendations came into our society, and all of a sudden you see obesity skyrocket. You know, so obviously it's so clear that our recommendations are not working. You know, so it's a real good alternative, and like you point out, to health, it just has a really, you know, beneficial impact that it can have on our society.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. Like, my dad is 57 years old, and he's diabetic, and he's probably 40 pounds overweight, maybe 50 pounds overweight. And to tell him that, Dad, you need to eat 2 eggs and a good side of bacon and, you know, cooked in butter for breakfast, he thinks I'm literally trying to, like, kill him and collect life insurance. Because his paradigm suggests that, you know, all through the 80s, that oatmeal and honey is a good thing to have for breakfast with some tea.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, Dad, with diabetes, you're going to die. Like, you're literally going to kill yourself if that's what you eat. And you know, the dietitians will tell him, you need to eat carbs every 2 to 3 hours to keep your blood sugar stable. And how do we really teach people, like, what's actually happening inside the body and how it's a more effective and more efficient means of you know, diet, eating, I guess. You know, that's what we need to look at it, man. It's like, how can we just create that paradigm shift just by educating people?
Yeah, exactly, man. And actually, my dad Floyd Wilson, he's an avid lifter, and he's in his 50s, and he actually started ketogenic dieting earlier, six months ago, and he's actually eating more calories than he was before. And he looks honestly like he got 10 years younger. Like, he lost body fat. He's getting super lean. I'm pretty pumped up because he's going to come up to my lab in about a month. So I'm going to check how much muscle he's actually gained. But, yeah, man, awesome. I think it's real important.
Yeah. One question for you, man. As far as high-fat diets, have you actually done an analysis on your blood work on any regular occasion, or? What's your, I'm just curious to see, you know, what has your cholesterol done? What has your inflammation done? Your A1C, all that stuff. What, have you seen any changes at all?
Yep. So, great question. So, my HDL actually went up, and which is a good cholesterol. The good cholesterol went up. My LDL has always been really low, so it actually stayed around the same. But my triglycerides went down a little bit, which is really good for cardiovascular health. And my insulin levels went down, which is great for metabolism. So basically, my profile and my inflammation went down. So the only thing that basically happened with blood work is my HDL went up, my inflammation went down, my insulin went down. And even, I guess, pointed out, like, my joints went down. The joint pain I used to have went down quite extensively. So even if I go back on the carbs, like, I feel like my joints are healed.
Right. One thing I'd be interested in, man, if you're doing your next study, is doing blood work at the beginning and the end. Because, I mean, you're young, you're healthy, you're fit, you're lean. you've got good body function, man. Like, that's, you know, pretty much a given. So your body handles fats really well, and your body handles training really well. And I'd be curious to see what, you know, the results would be of just average people. See if, you know, if their body responded as well as yours. It'd be a very good thing to add to your study. I'm sure it'd be simple enough to do, but at the end, but or but at the beginning, but at the end kind of thing. But just do a general comparison and see where the trends go.
Yeah, oh, 100%, man. Oh, actually, one more thing I'll point out on our last study that we did. We saw that we had real well-resistant strength guys. Their HDL went up too, their good cholesterol, but also their testosterone went up 100 points.
That I believe for sure. I do that every year.
Yeah. So
I mean, for PCT, not that I'm giving anything away, but that's usually what a lot of people do. A lot of my clients will do is, you know, go on a high fat, high saturated fat, low carbohydrate diet and massively increase their natural testosterone production.
We actually did. We haven't published this, but we did case studies on basically an individual who's basically testosterone just plummeted and it wasn't moving. Mm-hmm. We put them on a ketogenic diet, and their testosterone within a month had gone back into the normal range, actually in the high normal range. So honestly, and actually I want to speak to that too, Ben, with PCT and even just in general, either PCT or even a guy who's even natural coming out of their contest, both have the same impact of their testosterone is going to be low. And one of the cool things is, you know, people talk about like reverse dieting and slowly bringing their calories up. But the bottom line is one thing that we know is that when you come out of a contest, your test is low and your body preferentially is putting on fat over muscle. That's what we found in the study. So, but the bottom line is this, is that if your body's preferentially putting on fat coming out of a contest, why not shift your metabolism at that point to where it's preferentially using fat as fuel? So one thing for bodybuilders, like say that you're in the off season and you're trying to grow, maybe you're on carbs or maybe you're doing cyclic ketogenic dieting because you want better pumps, you want better performance. But when you come out of a contest and your testosterone's low, and you're trying to recover your hormones and your body's preferentially putting on fat, maybe that's a good time to go ketogenic as you come out of the contest, and it may prevent you from gaining as much fat on that rebound.
Yeah, man, like I said, that's exactly what I do. Because after a show, I mean, after that two-week rebound period, you don't anticipate putting on a tremendous amount of muscle. At least I don't. Like, I'm going into recovery phase, you know, trying to basically let my body heal and, you know, lower calories, lower carb requirement for sure. I mean, some guys use it to use 6 weeks of growth after a show because their calories are going to go up so much. But I usually see a two to three week like boost, and then I start to drop back down. So at that point, then I'll drop my calories down, do a keto style diet, and you know, optimize hormones. I feel better, and hopefully you optimize your body comp as well.
Cool. Exactly.
So to touch on what I'm about to do, which I haven't done since 2009, I think, I'm about to do a really high and low fat diet, a really high carb and low fat diet. I haven't done it, and I'm trying to be pretty aggressive with my growth. I'm trying to go to this Arnold, you know, and be 15 to 20 pounds heavier. So I'm going to be pretty aggressive with my dieting. So I'm going to go relatively low fat, like probably under 20% of my daily calories from fat. Super high carb and obviously high to moderate protein. So, you know, just, and trying to really up my training volume. So I'll probably go in, or frequency, trying to be going twice a day and see how that works, man. Because oftentimes when I go training twice a day, my body just feels like it's beat up, man. I want to sleep all the time. Obviously it's growing, but no, I'm just, you know, it's years since I've done that type of diet. I think my body kind of responds now to whatever I subject it to, because obviously if you're lower fat, your calories overall will be lower. You know, obviously you have to eat more volume of food. We'll see, man. I'm curious. So I'm going to do 10 weeks of, 40-40-20 kind of thing, or 50-30-20, 50 carb, 30 protein, 30 20 fat kind of deal, and see how it goes. I'm curious. And, you know, train as often as my body can handle. Hopefully my joints hold up and everything holds up and I can come in 20 pounds heavier. Once I get into contest prep, I'll go back to the higher fat, lower carb approach, I think, because I think my brain just stays more stable. I'm able to actually function in my business and my life and with my family and stuff. But, for the off season, I'm going to give it a try, man, and I keep everybody posted on how it goes.
Well, I think one of the biggest things that, like you're pointing out here, is that the thing is carbohydrates, they're a tool. Right? I mean, like you pointed out, like, you get a good pump. You feel like your training volume oftentimes can be really high. And mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I really like about what you're pointing out, too, is that whatever someone decides, if they're going to go really high carb, their fats are going to have to adapt and go a lot lower. And whereas when someone's going super high fat, they need to go really low carb. And I think, you know, you're not, like, riding this middle ground. And I think that's awesome. You know, your calories, like you said, they're probably not going to be as high. Your fats are going to be super low. So but the key point here is that you're training twice a day. So you're mm-hmm. in that sort of rare situation really where you're just going to use those carbs to fuel the exercise to give you the pumps that you need. Whereas a lot of people might be training like 3-4 times a week. And yet they have super high carbs, but I think for you, it's going to work tremendous. I mean, especially because your muscles are going to be super sensitive.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'll definitely be increasing my volume, and I love training with high volume and high frequency. You know, and I don't always do it because I don't think. I always kind of try to adjust my training to my dietary intake, but I'm trying to give myself just as many nutrients as I can possibly, as my digestive system can handle, while getting as many workouts as my nervous system can handle and my joints and, you know, just trying to push it up. And I think this is going to be a good approach for me because, I mean, I did have almost 3 months off the gym, so my body feels great and feels fresh. So, you know, I think the best way for me to, push the envelope with muscle growth over essentially 3 months is with this, you know, as many workouts as you possibly can. And I just don't find I recover quite as well when I'm on a low-fat diet. I know there's no real correlation with carbohydrate and protein synthesis, but actually, that's a good question, man. Somebody asked me that the other day. I didn't really have a good answer for it. Somebody, you can help with this. The idea that how does insulin affect protein synthesis, if at all?
That's a great question. So, the funny thing is, what I would say is that we get fast forward to the end of the semester, we're actually going to test protein synthesis following resistance training and when you're keto adapted versus on a high carb diet. We're going to compare the two. And once we have that, we'll be able to say a lot more. What I can tell you right now is that basically there's two or three studies I know of where they gave protein after exercise and then they combined that with a high dose of carbs. And it mm-hmm. didn't enhance protein synthesis and or decrease protein breakdown. Where I think carbs and insulin are anabolic is the fact that they drive carbohydrates into the cell, which enhances the energy for protein synthesis, you know, long term. And I do think that's important. But maybe where the one time insulin can be anabolic, let's say, and enhance protein synthesis, is at super physiological levels. So if you're just trying to have a high amount of carbs, I don't think research is showing that, like, that enhances protein synthesis, but insulin at super physiological levels can protein. There are studies that do show that. So, like, taking carbs with insulin, for example, not your body's normal insulin, can be anabolic, but your normal insulin levels that you get from diet is probably not going to enhance the protein synthesis response.
I mean, I forget exactly what his question was. He had a really well put together, well thought out question. I was like, man, that's a really good thought, and I don't really remember what it was. Unfortunately, I wish I did, but it was just basically, it was kind of like, if this is true, then why doesn't, you know, the amount of carb you take in affect insulin? I forget whichever it was, but I guess you kind of explained it. It's, you know, everyone suggests that, you know, protein synthesis is regulated by leucine, so why carbohydrates don't affect it. But, you know, if, man, I wish I remember what that comment was, and I'll probably remember it as soon as we get off the call and cake myself. But next time I remember it, I'll post it on Facebook.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing I will say is that one thing we definitely know is this. Insulin does have a role with protein synthesis. The question is, like, how much do you need? Like, for example, like, and of course, that's always going to depend. Like, if you're keto-adapted, there are other, you're relying on fat as fuel, so that theoretically is going to provide the energy for protein synthesis. If you're not keto-adapted, then some carbohydrates are going to be important for fuel. But one thing I want to emphasize to, like, the listener is that insulin sensitivity is almost everything. So, you know, that's why maybe getting your carbs up, if you're really insulin sensitive, can enhance protein synthesis. So, like, a guy like you, you've been going low carb, you're probably super insulin sensitive, you're going to get an anabolic response. But then after 8 weeks, and we talked about this before too, and I know that you actually have done diets and recommended diets where you're kind of cycling your carbs, so you get an anabolic response earlier on, but then as your body, your muscles become sort of resistant to insulin and your fat cells start to become more sensitive to insulin, then you're cycling back to more of a lower carbohydrate type of diet. So I think as important as carbs and insulin could be possibly for anabolism, I also think that keeping muscles really sensitive to insulin is equally, if not more important.
Yeah, I totally agree. That makes sense. You know, I think, you know, this may be an interesting thing for you to think about, or maybe you have an answer to it. The idea that, you know, if a cell is resistant to insulin, how would that affect uptake of proteins into the cell, if at all? You know, if insulin shuttles proteins into the cell, or shuttles all nutrients into the cell, right?
Yes,
would it in any way affect uptake?
So here's the weird thing. So I used to do a lot of stuff with aging and, you know, preventing people from losing muscle with age, you know, because like a lot of us, right, you know, my dad's my hero. I want him to live forever. So I started doing a lot of research on muscle and with aging. Mm-hmm. And one thing, there's this paradox that we see. Basically, we think aging, a lot of it's caused by insulin resistance. And what happens is that insulin, you know, when people are real insulin sensitive, like a guy in our lab, Jake Orne, when he takes carbs, he actually gets a pump. Like, he'll eat a meal, he'll just get a pump, and all of his muscles, veins start popping everywhere. Really good sign of insulin sensitivity. Because insulin increases blood flow. And that is anabolic, and that drives amino acids to the muscle. Well, what happens is that elderly people are so insulin resistant that when they have carbs, paradoxically, it decreases protein synthesis. And the reason why is because insulin will stimulate the uptake of aminos into muscle, but it also increases blood flow, so you get more amino acids in the muscle. What happens is that they're not increasing any of that blood flow. So they'll just get rid of the local amino acids near their muscle, but they won't increase the blood flow to the muscle because they're so insulin resistant. So that's why insulin sensitivity is so important. So basically, when you eat a meal and you have carbs, you drive blood flow to the muscle, you drive amino acids towards the muscle, you drive carbohydrates directly into the muscle, and when you're insulin resistant, the carbohydrates are just floating around in your blood. They cause serious, serious problems. And, you know, that's just not a good thing. So that's why focusing on that insulin sensitivity becomes so critical.
Interesting, man. That's it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I guess the long and short of it is, you know, as you and I have probably both preached for a long period of time, is carbohydrate is a tool, and you use it according to how much you earn it, basically, and how much you're planning on earning it. So in my case, I'm planning on doing a lot of workouts and really as much volume as my body can handle, and thereby I can probably handle a lot more carbohydrate, less likely to make my body insulin resistant, whereby most people who are training, you know, a couple times a week or, you know, really minimal intensity, they probably don't need a tremendous amount of carbohydrate all the time. It's just a better idea to, you know, vegetable, protein, and fat base it, and that's it.
Exactly right. And I know sometimes, too, from talking to you, I know you kind of target your carbohydrates around your workout.
Sure, I do. Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, and that's a way to kind of to prevent some of the negative effects of carbohydrates. So, yeah, absolutely, man. Without a doubt. That's definitely the way to do it.
I guess another answer is there's no definitive answer, and it's a matter of working out what works best for you, and that's really what we're here to do is teach people tools, tricks, and tips to optimize you, to optimize what you're doing right now, and not, you know, there's no general answer to say everyone should eat a high-fat diet or everyone should eat a high-carb diet or anywhere in between. It needs to be adjusted probably daily around what you're doing. You know, if you're burning, eat. If you're sitting on your butt, don't eat. it's almost as simple as that.
Exactly. And that's one of the things, like, I'll go to conferences and I'll speak, and I will see people debating ferociously saying high fat's the number one way to go. And then you have another people like, you know, high carb's the way to go. And I think one of the things that you, basically what you're saying, and I'm in 100% agreement, is it's going to depend on your body. It's going to depend on the situation that you're in. And it's a matter of just educating people. These are tools. This might be when you use this tool. This might be when you use this tool. It's all going to depend on the phase that they are in their life, the phase that they are in their training, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and I think that's the biggest thing. You know, well, maybe when you come off a contest, maybe that's a good time to do it. Maybe when you're recovering and your volume's lower, that's a good time to do it. Maybe when your volume's super high, that's when you reintroduce carbs. So it's really just educating everyone who's listening right now. Hey, this is a tool. Here's how you might incorporate it.
I mean, everyone wants to be spoon-fed, right? You know, I've kind of been putting together programs online and trying to educate people online for almost 3 years now. And people just want me to say, Ben, tell me exactly what to do. And there just isn't an answer like that. So as much as I can, I try to say, well, you should do exactly this based on what I know that they're doing. But it's so impossible to say, hey, you know, you need to follow this exact diet without seeing how you train, without seeing how your body responds to insulin, without seeing, you know, your basic nutrition prior to this and your blood work even. Like, this is impossible. But I'm trying to give people general protocols, I guess it's feasible, but it's never going to be precise. So.
Exactly. Right. And
good.
One, I just want to kind of tell just the people who are listening, because I'm sure, undoubtedly, some people are going to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to try ketogenic dieting. Just a few tips from kind of what we've learned is that there is an adaptation period. You know, it is going to take likely like 2 weeks for your body to sort of adapt to this, to being fat adapted. So even if you're going to do cyclic, allow your body first to be fat adapted, then start going cyclic and realize that it's probably going to start to take anywhere from 10 to 14 days before you're like, oh, I feel okay with this. So for those of you out there and you're like, those people are like, oh, I've tried ketogenic dieting and it's for 3 days, they haven't tried ketogenic dieting. So if you're going to, if you're going to try it, start off with your fat tie, and then, you know, if you can, once you find, you know, hey, I'm in ketosis, and you can up your protein more, go ahead and experiment with that and learn what combination works best for you. That'd be my overall advice for people listening.
Right. Is there a method to suggest for people testing that they're in ketosis? I mean, no, there's the ketogenic strips, but those are rather expensive. That's probably the best way.
Yeah. So they have, well, they have the urine stick. I think are like a real easy way to sort of do it. And those, the urine sticks are the least expensive. The blood meter is more expensive. I think like in our lab, and we buy them in bulk, it's, I think, at least $5 a test. So for those of you guys like, I need to know everything that's going on in my blood, then you can get those meters, basically. Just look up like a ketone blood meter. But I would definitely just start off with like a cheap method urine. Is it research quality? No, but it's still going to tell you, hey, am I in ketosis? But if you want the blood sticks, what you could do is just measure yourself maybe once a week and at a certain time. The other thing, advice I'm going to give you guys listening is that when you wake up in the morning, your cortisol is going to be highest, and that means that your body's going to be producing glucose from protein. What that means is that your lowest level readings on ketosis are going to be in the morning. I've had people who are depressed because, like, I never get into ketosis, I never can get in, but it's because they're measuring in the morning when their blood ketones are high.
Right.
So you want to measure at night as far away from your workout as possible when your cortisol is lowest. That's one advice I would give people, and maybe get the blood ketone measure. Guys, you are in ketosis when your blood's measuring about 0.3 millimolars, and it'll read that to you. The urine sticks are easy, but about 0.3 millimolars is minimum threshold. Above that, like 1 millimolar is probably really good. If it, above 0.3 to 0.5, at least you know you're getting into mild nutritional ketosis.
What other readings? I think I believe that those are the blood, those blood sticks give you additional readings. Do you know if there's other ones on there, or is it just ketones?
It depends. You can get, like, in our lab, we have strips that will measure everything, but it's a machine that maybe be a little bit costly. You know, it's probably run them over a grand, but it would measure every, like, blood, you know, basically measure, like, more the safety parameters that you would be interested in. But the urine strips are super cheap, and the blood ketones are only about $5 a strip. And that will tell you stuff like blood glucose, and it will tell you your blood ketones. And your blood glucose is going to be obviously lower than normal, but that's okay because your ketone levels are higher.
Right. Cool, man. Dude, this has been great and informative for me for sure. I'm probably going to pick up one of those blood meters just so I can check my blood often. I mean, a bit of an expense, but when you're trying to be great at what you do, it's probably definitely worth the expense. One thing I wanted to ask was, is it possible for people to get, I know you supplement with ketones to actually kind of ease the process to get into ketosis and maybe get a little more energy from ketones. Is there any commercially available ketone supplements you suggest?
Oh, good, great question. So right now, I don't think that the ketones are commercially available, but I do know that they're for research purposes only. If you look up, like, ketones, the main ones, like beta-hydroxybutyrate, kind of like beta-hydroxybeta-methylbutyrate, but not the same thing. It's just the name similar. But if you can look up BHB or ketones experimental use only, or research for research purposes only, but that's what's being used right now, and I tested them, and you can get your ketones up super high. It's real interesting because, like, when you have carbs, you eat carbs, you feel happy. When you have ketones, you kind of feel, like, elated. It feels like low-dose caffeine, and it's super cool. For those of you guys who are like, well, I'm not going to get the research-only products, then they should get medium chain triglycerides. But I mean, coconut oil is cool, but the real hardcore, like, medium chain triglycerides, you have enough of those, and you'll feel the same feeling as you do when you take the ketones. And I've tested them kind of head to head against each other. You get your ketones pretty similar high. However, for you guys out there, almost, you know, bodybuilders, if a little good, more's better. So they'll take, like, 3 servings of MCTs, and you know what I know? That's going to mess their stomach up. So you have to adapt to MCTs.
Yeah, they'll be on the way to the toilet.
100%.
Okay, awesome. Dude, amazing. That's great. I'm looking forward to having a ketone supplement available on the market pretty soon. I think that's Bill Lowland is in charge of that. No, it's who's in charge of – who's got kind of the patent on that? It was
I want to say it's Patrick Arnold.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Yeah, and Dominique D'Agostino, I think, is on that as well.
Awesome. Yeah, man, hopefully they'll be busting it out soon. I know they're doing tons of research, and hopefully people will see the benefits.
Dude, that would be huge, and especially the great thing about you coming out with that supplement, too, is even now, even though I'm adapted, when I have the MCT, it definitely hurts my stomach when I have too much. So even if you go head-to-head with the ketones, your stomach hurts. But the ketones themselves never hurts my stomach, and there's tons of information where taking ketones actually improves insulin sensitivity. So, and the cool thing about taking ketones is even if someone's on carbs, but they want health benefits of ketones, like joint health and stuff, then you could actually have those benefits along with having carbs and be more insulin sensitive.
Hmm. So much great information, and, you know, hopefully people realize the benefit and keep learning and applying, and most importantly, teaching other people, man. I think it's so important that everybody just kind of spreads the word and shares the word of everything that we're teaching you, because ultimately the idea is to spread the word of intelligent muscle building across the world. And that's, you know, why I do what I do. And I'm sure that's what you do, buddy. So, thanks again, always, for your time, Dr. The Man. And I will see you this week in the lab for some Wingates and some metabolic cart.
Yes. All right. See you, Ben.
All right, champion. Have a great night. Muscle Expert out.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook / IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter @ IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPakulski.com.